So the drama in the middle of Parshas Vayishlach seems to be a drama about the family of Yaakov protecting their daughter's integrity, their sister's integrity. But there's a sub-drama that Rashi constantly highlights. And that sub-drama is that now that Yaakov has a family, and this is the first time there's a Jewish nation, it's not just Avram who lives as an itinerant, it's not just Yitzchak who's being hosted by Avimelech, there's a real family, and a family can build a community, and they actually buy land. This is the first time when they get back from Lavan's house, they purchase land in Eretz Yisrael. Vayikin es hasada, so Yaakov purchases land. So now that we're settling the land, part of the challenge for the Jewish people, and now there's a Jewish people, is to create a land that can host the Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence. And that land has to have a moral fiber. Until this stage, we didn't have that responsibility nor that charge. So until this stage, Yaakov and Avram and Yitzchak were preachers. And they're spreading ideas. And they're hoping that these ideas will catch. Now that there's an actual people, we have to try to cleanse this land. And that, of course, is a very, very morally challenging question. Right? When we come to Eretz Yisrael, we're asked to eliminate seven nations. Let's just call it what it is, genocide. We're asked to, again, none of them have to die. They can all leave on their own will. But the assumption is they're not going to leave on their own will. And the wars are fought and people are killed. And this is something that's hard for us to understand, just like it was hard for us to understand Avram Zakeda. I mean, we understand it, but it's still morally hard for us to perform. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to cleanse this land and to create a broadcast booth for Hashem's presence in this world. And down the line, that's more important for humanity, that will lead to general human prosperity and welfare. So you're starting to see the first stirrings of that in this story. And it starts with when Dina is initially raped or seduced. My voice is failing. So Dina is initially raped or seduced. So what happens? Pasuk Zion. The children of Yaakov, the brothers, hear what happens. They're very angry. Kinevala asa bi Yisrael lishkavis bas Yaakov, because it's an affront to the Jewish people. She's bas Yaakov. The pasuk should end there. V'chein lo ye'aseh. Why do you have that extra phrase? They violated bas Yaakov. V'chein lo ye'aseh. So Rashi says, it's not just an affront to the Jewish integrity and the Jewish sanctity, but since the Mabul, hundreds of years earlier, people have become a little bit more cautious about sexual violation. They were able to trace the total collapse of humanity to sexual promiscuity. And on their own, they became much more sexually conservative and much more sexually appropriate. And you see this throughout Sefer Bereishis. Remember, Paro and Avimelech, as voracious as they are sexually, they ask first. They ask Avram, who is this woman? They don't just take Sarah. They ask who she is. When they're lied to and they're deceived and they're told she's his sister, then they take them. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to them in a dream, they're horrified. They're not just intimidated, they're horrified. I would never have taken a married. Hebrew Laspal. Avimelech says, I would never have taken a married woman. So the world itself has started to move towards a state of greater family values and a state of less sexual violation because of the Mabul. So it's not just the Jewish ethos, it's v'chein lo yaseh. This is not something that the world accepts. And it certainly shouldn't exist in Eretz Yisrael. So you're starting to see that this is a drama, not just about the dignity of Dina and the family of Yaakov, but it's a question of what type of moral state will reign in Eretz Yisrael. Same thing happens a little bit later when they ask Yaakov, hakizona yaseh sachosenu. Can we allow our daughter to be a zona? Now that's classic hyperbole. She wasn't a zona. A zona is a prostitute. Aleim haderach. She was either raped or seduced or somewhere in between. She was probably seduced. And it was a one-time event. It's not as if she's selling herself to a lifetime of prostitution. And that's why they have the word kit. They didn't say hazona yaseh sachosenu, but hakizona yaseh sachosenu. So Rashi writes the word hefker. Rashi says that they weren't calling her a zona, but this is just a general looseness and a licentiousness about sexual activity that we can't allow to happen in this area. So again, it's hard for us to understand or to justify, and there's a real moral question as to whether the brothers acted correctly or didn't act correctly because they took advantage of other people. But beyond that story, behind this story, this is a necessary purging of Eretz Yisrael from sexual promiscuity. Because if not, history can't move forward. Until now, ideas have to be introduced. Now those ideas have to start to create a certain society. And that's why Rashi says, when the Torah writes in Pasuk Yud Gimel, when they say, Vayanu b'nei Yaakov eshchem v'yeschamor, aviv b'mirma, v'yidaberu, they spoke to Shechem, listen carefully, this is a Pasuk that contains both the narrator describing and the narrator adding. They spoke to Shechem. Okay, so there's the Torah narrating this conversation between Shechem. And then the narrator turns to the audience and says, by the way, these were the people that were Timei Din Achuzo. Vaydabru el Shechem asher Timei es Din Achuzo. We know who these people are. We know who the people of Shechem are. We saw this. But the Torah is slamming its fist down and say, you may feel that this is deceptive behavior on the part of Bnei Yaakov, but these are the people who violated Din Achuzo, and they have to be dealt with because the country has to be cleansed of their presence. So there's a lot of effort in Rashi to remind us that this isn't just brothers defending the honor of Dina. These are brothers creating a moral state that exists all over the world that sadly doesn't yet exist in Eretz Yisrael. That has to be cleaned up, and there can't be snus in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sorry, if you want, think about next week's Parsha, where there's also, quote-unquote, a zona in Eretz Yisrael. Who's the zona next week's Parsha? In Timna? What?
Tamar.
She's not really a zona, but the optics are she's a zona. She's a lema derech. And that zona becomes a mother. Ultimately, she's not a zona. She's a mother of Malchus Yisrael. It's not really znus. Again, whether right or wrong, but it's not really znus. So there's this attempt to create, to undo some of the znus that has started to worm its way into the area. Now, the very next section, again, you have to ask yourself, why does the Torah detail issues that may not be as important? In the very next section, Yaakov is on his way back. He's worried about the people. He's on his way back to Beit El. And there's this pasuk in the middle that says, get rid of your avodah zarah, hasira Elohei Anechar. Where did that come from? Elohei Anechar. This is the first time that Yaakov and his family are encountering paganism in Israel. Lavan wasn't a paganist. Lavan was a sorcerer. Lavan was a magician. It's a different, it's Zoroaster. It's the world of magic, the world of voodoo, the world of... But now you get real paganism, Elohei Anecha, people that worship idols. And because of this encounter with Shechem, there was a rub-off. Anytime Jewish people encounter another culture, it's going to be a rub-off. That's the Hellenist challenge of Hanukkah. There's an encounter between Greece, between Athens and Jerusalem. And some of Athens rubbed off on Jerusalem, just like some of Jerusalem rubbed off on Athens, which we'll talk about next week, which is absolutely crucial for the future intellectual development of humanity, that Jerusalem rubs off on Athens. But here you have this encounter with Shechem. They had idols. But they probably didn't worship them, but they had them. And if you have them, you're going to worship them. So you have to remove the idols. So this is the second step of cleansing Eretz Yisrael. Not just cleansing it of Gilo Arayos, but cleansing it of Avodah Zarah. And the irony is, and the hard part is, that in order to cleanse Eretz Yisrael from Gilo Arayos and Avodah Zarah, it has to be Ritzicha. So we're not yet at this perfect state where Eretz Yisrael could be purged and cleansed without murder, without fighting. Ideally, you'd like a world in which the cleansing and the purging is taken in more peaceful terms, in which you have a world of peace without people killing, without murder, without not calling it murder in the criminal sense, but without people taking other people's lives, without Avodah Zarah, without Gilo Arayos. But it's really important for Rashi to constantly highlight that there's a sub-drama. It's not just defending Dina, as if it took place in Brooklyn or something. They're defending the status of Eretz Yisrael. And they have to remove Hayan Echar. They have to remove their clothing. Interesting. Hachlifu esim lo sechem. So you would think, change your clothing because they're bloody. If you would read the Parsha, why are they changing their clothing? Because they just went to war. Hachlifu esim lo sechem because they're bloody. Rashi says, no, these were clothing of Avodah Zarah. It's very interesting because did they actually take the robes of the priests? And were they wearing the robes of the priests? If so, it's probably Aser. Again, it's Prima Tantara. If some of the Avos kept the Torah, you're not allowed to get Hana from the robes of the priests. That'd be really strange that if you're wearing the robes of the priests, the robes that were used for Avodah Zarah, the clothing, it's more likely that what Rashi means is Sus Shel Avodah Zarah means clothing associated with the world of Avodah Zarah, which is technically not Aser, but it still creates cultural creep. I always think it's instructive. One of the things I'd like you to think about this year now that you're living your first September outside of America. How much of your December in America surrounds Christmas? Well, you don't keep Christmas, obviously, but how much of your life is dictated? Christmas shopping deals, Christmas carols, Christmas trees, Christmas... Okay, it's not usher to look at a Christmas tree. It's not usher to sing a Christmas carol, but it starts to warm into your consciousness and just to create a presence that's certainly not Jewish and that has very, very deep roots with Avodah Zarah. Arguably, Christmas is the most religiously troubling day in the American national holidays. Thanksgiving is great, Halloween's a joke, President's Day is wonderful, Martin Luther King Day, why not? But Christmas has very, very deep religious roots. So the culture creep, and for me, just being in Eretz Yisrael, not hearing the carols and not hearing the Christmas songs and not hearing the Christmas, on sports TV you don't say Happy Christmas, it just makes it a different place. So this is the subplot of Parshas Vayishlach. One more Rashi. What other Rashi should I quote? Yeah. What's very interesting is that this is the first communication between Yaakov and his children. Yaakov doesn't speak to his children at all in Vayetze, he speaks to his wives. And through his wives, the message is delivered to his children. There's no conversation between Yaakov and his children. Even the decision about where he's going to sleep that night, which is manipulated by his children, engineered by the children, doesn't speak to the children. Reuven is buying roses for Leah. Leah gives the roses to Rachel. Rachel then sleeps with Yaakov. I'm sorry, Rachel gets the roses, Leah gets the roses, and Leah gives the roses to Rachel, and Leah sleeps with Yaakov. Excuse me, I'm a little tired today. But there's no conversation between Yaakov and his children. This is the first conversation between Yaakov and his children. And of course it isn't. It isn't easy, it isn't pretty. Now, they're described as, let me just find the pasuk, I'm sorry. So now the people of Shechem are recovering. A lot of interesting family connections here. Shimon v'Levi, Bnei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi Achedina. So Rashi says as follows. Shnei Bnei Yaakov, that's how the pasuk is introduced. They were his children, but they didn't act like his children. What does it mean they didn't act like his children? Did they not honor him? Did they not respect him? No, they didn't consult with him. They didn't seek his permission. They didn't get his advice. They didn't disrespect him in the frontal sense by lashing out, saying something mean, hurting his feelings. There's a breakdown of communication. They don't go for advice. This would have been a perfect opportunity for them to ask Yaakov what he feels, how he counsels them. It's a very dicey situation. The people in the area are looking. Rashi says a little bit later that all the residents of Canaan had this masara, that the Jews would inherit Canaan, but they just thought it would be thousands of years later. And now all of a sudden you're becoming too aggressive. There's going to be a reaction and a recoil, very similar to our day. The world knows that the Jews are going to live in Israel subconsciously. Why do you think Yerushalayim is so embattled? Because everyone knows this is where the end of history will wash. It's very, very, very subliminal. I don't think people could articulate it, but there are metaphysical realities that human beings are aware of subconsciously. This is where history will end. And there's a breakdown in communication, and sadly, that breakdown in communication gets a lot worse in Parshas Vayeshev, where there's no communication. You'd expect Reuven and the brothers to go to Yaakov and ask him about Yosef's dreams. You'd expect them to come back, and sadly, the communication between Yaakov and his children throughout the entire six Parshios is very, very strained. And even when Yaakov says, we need to go down for food, and Reuven tries to convince him, and Yaakov says, what are you crazy? It's crazy. Why are you telling me that? You're going to give me my two grandsons. You're going to kill the two grandsons. Part of it is that there's a larger family now. It's easier to have communication when you have one or two children. You have larger family units. People are different. It's hard to have communication. Yaakov, Dafka, has great communication with his mother. He doesn't speak to Yitzchak that much, but he and his mother seem to communicate very, very well. It's only Yaakov and Yitzchak. Avram and Yitzchak have great communication at the Akedah. It's a great conversation between the two. They're working together. So part of it is when you have a larger family and different people, the strains that are going to be introduced are going to lead to harder communication. And the answer to that is that families are built on communication, as are relationships. You always have to keep the channels of communication open. Sometimes communication is very hard. You have to say things that are very difficult. It's easier to sweep them under the carpet and let things go by and move on to the next station. But that's not the way you build relationships. The way you build relationships is getting it out there. You could agree, you could disagree. You could hurt each other's feelings. You have to speak respectfully. Some of the things you have to say could be hurtful to people. But it's better for it to be out there, in most cases, than for it to be suppressed and just continue on, because then they tend to fester and the hurt feelings tend to grow and become polluted. And part of it is just, this is a final Rashi. It wasn't just that his family was so large, but that Yaakov, during the formative years of his children, doesn't have a lot of time with them. In last week's parsha, when he makes his first request from Lavan to stop working for Lavan, he says, Masai Asa Lebesi. When can I start working Lebesi? Then say Leatzmi Lebesi. Rashi says in Parshas Vayetze that Yaakov was complaining that I'm working with you all day long, Lavan, and I'm not working with my kids. Kids worked in those days. They didn't go to high school. They didn't go to North Shore. They worked. They worked in the field. So my kids are working in the field, and I'm working with you. Which means that all those 20 years, when he's having children, he's not with his children, because his profession, in this case, serving Lavan, demands that he be elsewhere. He's a shepherd. Shepherds have to travel. You can't be in the same location. You have to travel from mountain to mountain. So part of the solution is make sure that when your children are being raised, that you have time with them. Not just learn to communicate, but learn to bond with them, learn to do things together, work together, find common time. Because if you don't have time with them, then you'll be strangers. And if you're strangers, then it's very hard to communicate with strangers because you have no trust, you have no backbone. So it's very interesting that this is the first time that Yaakov talks to his children, and they don't talk to him. And of course, when they finally return after the deed is done, he's angry and they're upset. And this is one of the rare instances in the Torah where there's a dispute and there's no resolution between the two. Yaakov says, Lama achartem osi? Why did you disrupt all the waters? Why did you ruin me? Lahavisheni? What did they say? Hakizoni yasas achoseinu? And who wins? No one. Parsha ends. It's a very, very important section that really shows that people are on totally different wavelengths. Because they should say they agree to him, he agrees to them, you're right. Essentially, they each walk away without any agreement. There's no agreement in this communication. It's a little study in communication, relationships, and family. Okay, so two interesting Rashis from Vayishlach. One is painting the background picture for what's going on. It's a very hard parsha to read morally. Just like told us is a hard parsha to read morally when Yaakov swindles the brachas of Esav. But there's a larger picture that we know has to be accomplished. And one day, we're going to return to the scene where we have to purge Eretz Yisrael of sinful behavior in ways that are morally troubling to us. This is a trailer, a promo, for something that we're going to live through, Amir Tashem and Yeshua and Shoftim. Second of all, the communication is off. Communication is off, in part because there's now a large family, in part because they just didn't have any time together. I apologize. I'm going to use the microphone for share today. I'm losing it pretty quickly.